Hey, you're tuned in to the Verve Podcast live from the heart of Las Vegas, Nevada. Thanks for listening, and viva la Verve!
So I heard about these two guys who were sitting on opposite ends of a bar, and the first guy looked down at the other guy and said, "Excuse me, are you from Wisconsin?" The other guy said, "Yeah, I am from Wisconsin. How'd you know that?" First guy said, "Well, I'm from Wisconsin too, but wait a second. From that brogue in your voice, I'm guessing you're not originally from Wisconsin, are you? You're from Ireland." The guy said, "I am from Ireland. I'm from Dublin. I went to Trinity High School, graduated in 68. First guy said, "I went to Trinity High School. I graduated in 68. At which point, the bartender looked at a nearby woman and said, "It is going to be a long night. The O'Malley twins are drunk again." You know, sometimes maybe we get confused about who is who. Maybe we get confused about who I am and who you are. And that's kind of what I want to talk to you about today. Maybe sometimes you're not exactly who you think you are. And maybe sometimes this other person isn't quite who you think they are. We've been talking these last 2 weeks about becoming people who live not for ourselves, but for others. And that a life of serving others is actually a bigger, more fulfilling, more exciting, adventurous life than anything else we could have. And so there's a little bit of self-interest here because it is what's best for us, but that's not why we do it. The reason that we're thinking about living this life devoted to serving others is because it's the life that God has called us to. You know, for those who have decided to put their faith in and follow Jesus, God calls us to a life of doing good for other people. In fact, I want to show you just one of the places where this happens. So if you have a Bible, turn to the book of Titus, chapter 3. If you don't have a Bible with you, that is no problem. We'll put the verses on the screen. If you don't own an easy-to-read translation of the Bible at home, you can grab one on the way out. We give them out for free at the Velcro bar, so you can grab one of those. So in Titus, chapter 3, it's this early Christian leader named Paul, and he's writing to one of his like protege, kind of a ministry apprentice named Titus, and he's instructing him on, man, here's how we live the Christian life. Here's what you should teach other people now that you're becoming a leader in living the Christian life. And so we'll start in verse 1 where he writes, "Remind the people to be subject to rulers and authorities, to be obedient," and ready, "to be ready to do whatever is good." And then we're going to jump down to the 8th verse in this chapter where he says, "This is a trustworthy saying, and I want you to stress these things so that those who have trusted in God may be careful to devote themselves to doing what is good. These things are excellent and profitable for everyone." And then just a few verses later, he writes, "Our people must learn to devote themselves to doing what is good in order to provide for urgent needs and not live unproductive lives." So three times in just like a paragraph, the Bible stresses that, man, if we're going to follow Jesus, we need to do good. In fact, we should devote ourselves to doing good, looking for every opportunity we can to do good for other people. Now listen, it's not that a person becomes a Christian and someday gets to go to heaven because they've done good. This is the mistaken idea that most people have. It's not that at all. You become a Christian because you're bad, but God loves you anyway. And then you spend the rest of your life devoting yourself to doing good, not to earn anything from God, but just as a way of thanking him for what he's already given you. All right? And so not only will this help the lives of the other people that you're serving, but what we've been learning the last few weeks is that it's actually the only path to real life. We talked about this 2 weeks ago, that every single one of us, every single day, makes a wager. We are betting our lives. We're betting our lives on what is it that's going to make me feel fulfilled? What's going to give me joy? What's going to give me a sense of meaning and purpose? And there's two choices for this wager. You can either bet on serving yourself, I'm going to do everything and get everything I can for me, or you can bet your life on serving others, I'm going to try to do everything I can for other people. And what we've learned from reading about Jesus' teachings is he says, listen, the path of serving others is actually the path to real life. That's the life that's joyful and meaningful and abundant and exciting. The path of serving yourself, getting everything you can for you, that path actually leads away from real life. Any of you see the Time magazine that came out yesterday? It's going to be on newsstands this week. It's interesting. The cover, we'll put on the screen, says, "How Service Can Save Us." And so the article is about how increasingly they're actually proving that the best thing for people, for their health and for their wholeness, is serving. And now when soldiers come back from war with post-traumatic stress disorder, rather than going through counseling and assigning drugs to them, what they do is they put them in volunteer positions in their communities because they found it's a far more effective path to healing than counseling or drugs. What do you know? Jesus was actually right. And 2,000 years ago, we're discovering it. But Jesus said it a long time ago, the path to real life is serving. And so 2 weeks ago, we said, let's do it, man. Let's do this. Let's serve. Let's do good. Let's devote our lives to serving other people instead of ourselves. And last week, we talked about doing good, serving in the context of a church and how God calls all of us to volunteer in our church and to find a volunteer position that we can serve according to our giftedness and our passion so we love what we're doing and really making a difference with it. And we had this kind of volunteer expo out in the lobby. We're doing it again today. If you weren't here, there's a chance for you to go out, and each of the different ministries is represented, and you can find out about signing up for a first serve. First serve means you serve one time. That's it. And it's just an experiment to figure out, is this a good position for me? Because we don't want you to get stuck in something you don't love. And so if you don't love it, we'll help you find a different first serve until you finally find your match. And the idea is, man, as soon as possible, I want to find a place where I can serve and really make a difference with my life because God has called me to serve in the church. But it's not just in the church. We need to serve everywhere. Like in our homes, on the highway, at work, in our neighborhoods, everywhere and for everyone. But maybe especially for people who don't really know God. Because through serving them, we have a chance to kind of introduce them to God's love. And maybe especially for people who are really in need and can't really help themselves. And there's something really amazing that happens when we start serving other people for God's sake. The first amazing thing that happens is that we become Jesus to them. We can become Jesus to them. You know, there are so many people in the world who say things like, man, I would believe in God if I could, like, see him. You know, I would maybe believe in this whole Jesus thing if he showed up and I could interact with him. If I could just see him, if I could just have an encounter, then maybe I'd believe. And do you know that God has a plan for every single one of those people meeting Jesus? And his plan is you. It's you. One of the things I've done at the two churches I've led, the church in Virginia Beach for 12 years and now here at Vervis, we have everyone on our staff once a month take a personal retreat day. The idea is, as a pastor, you're kind of almost always serving other people, so it's just one day to kind of recharge, you know? And the idea is you're just going to connect really deeply with God that day. You're just going to go off by yourself. You know, you don't need to think about anybody else for one day, and just what we do is we pray and we fast. So we pray, and then we actually don't eat that day, partially because it gives you more time to pray and connect with God. And so about 7 years ago, I did my prayer and fasting day at Burger King, which is a really weird place to fast, right? Like, you don't go to Burger King to not eat, but that's exactly what I did. See, I left my house that day, and it was kind of cold, and normally I go to, like, the beach or to a park, but as I left my house, it started to rain, and I'm like, well, I'm not going to sit out in the rain, like, praying, and so I'm like, where should I go? What would be a good place for me by myself? And I'm driving along, and there's Burger King, and I thought, that'd be a really weird place to fast and not eat, but whatever. I'll just sit in a booth. I had a Bible and a journal I write stuff in. I'm just going to sit there. I'll just get a drink and sit there. So I went in, got my drink, went over to my booth, sat down, opened up my Bible, started reading. A couple minutes later, the door of the Burger King opened, and this guy walked in. I just looked up and noticed him. It was obvious from his appearance that he was very poor, probably homeless, just from his clothes and hair and stuff. And I looked back down and started reading my Bible again. But the weirdest thing happened. He walked over to me, and he started pacing in front of my booth. Like not like the whole restaurant, just my booth. Like, he never broke the boundaries of my booth. He's just doing this short little path over and over in front of me. And I'm doing my very best to ignore him because this day is about me and just me, right? It's me and God. I don't need to serve anyone else. But he won't stop pacing in front of my booth. And so, like, how long can you ignore the guy? So I'm thinking, maybe he really needs help. Vince, say something. So finally I was like, excuse me, sir, do you need something? And he stopped and he started talking. It was really difficult to understand what he said because he spoke broken English. Turns out he was from India. But finally, he holds up, I'm like catching some of it, not other parts, but he holds up this paper in front of me, and it was a job application for Burger King. And I was like, ew, do you want to apply here at Burger King? And he went, yes, yes, like very loud and emphatically, yes, yes. And I said, do you need help filling out the application? And he went, yes, yes. And I said, I could help you. Why don't you sit down? So he sits down, and we proceed to fill out this job application. So easy, right? Yeah, not so much. And I'm like, okay, what's your name? And he said it, and I'm like, you're going to have to spell that. I don't know what you said. So he spells it, and then I said, okay, address? He didn't have an address. He's homeless. So I'm like, let's make one up. I'm like, what do you do? I'm like, you have to write an address. Do you know an address? Is there any address? And so we write an address. This is work experience. And he starts talking really fast. And I thought I heard the word cook. I'm like, stop talking. I'm writing cook. That's good. So I wrote cook. And I'm like, oh, yeah, where were you a cook? I honestly don't know if he said India, Indiana, or Florida. I'm like, Indiana. I'm just like writing stuff, references. It was crazy. So finally we get done. It took almost an hour to fill out this application. I'm like, here you go. And he's like, thank you, thank you. I'm like, you're welcome. And he ran off, and I thought, I just lost like an hour of my day with God. But it was the right thing to do. Like that was obviously the right thing to do. Wait, yay, Vince, good job. And grabbed my Bible and opened it back up and started reading. 2 minutes later, he comes walking up, and he starts pacing in front of my booth again. I'm like, are you serious? Like, and he's not breaking the boundaries again. And I'm trying to ignore him, but it's hard now because we just spent an hour together. We're friends, you know? And so I'm like, can I just keep ignoring this guy? And so I'm thinking, what do I do? Do I have to talk to him? And I thought, maybe he's hungry. Like, who knows the last time he ate? And so I said, hey, buddy, like, have you eaten? Do you need some money for food? And he went, oh, yes, yes. And I was like, yeah, I can help you. So I got out my wallet, and I gave him a couple dollars, and He appreciated it. He really appreciated it. As I handed him the money, he grabbed my wrist. This is true. He reached down and grabbed my other wrist. He pulled my hands up to himself and started to say, thank you, thank you, thank you, as he took my hands and rubbed them on his body. And so he was like, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. And I'm like, you're welcome. You're welcome. Like, you laugh. It wasn't funny. It was unbelievable. So finally, he gets done rubbing himself with me. And he gave me back my hands, and he ran off to get his food. And I was like, woo! That just happened. How do I overcome this? What do I do? And so finally, I kind of like was like, all right, okay. And I kind of rubbed off my hands, and I was like, all right. And so I got my Bible back up, opened it up, and 2 minutes later, he walks up with his food. He's like, hello, and sits down with me. And I was like, hey. And so I'm, again, kind of like self-talking. You know, I'm like, he's probably lonely. He doesn't have a friend in the world. Just talk to the guy. I was like, man, tell me, how did you end up in Virginia Beach from India? And he's like, oh. I said, do you have family back there? Do you know anybody here? And so I asked him a ton of questions, like a long time. And so finally he starts asking me questions. He says, do you have family? And I said, yeah, I've got. Wait a minute. And so eventually, with all these questions, he points to my Bible that's sitting there. And he said, what's this? And I went, oh. I said, this might be kind of cool. Maybe I'll get a chance to talk to God, about God with him. And so I said, well, this is a Bible. And I said, God gave us the Bible. And I said, God also gave us Jesus. And before I could speak, he went, Jesus? And I said, yeah. And he went, Jesus. And I said, yeah. And he went, oh. And he gets out his wallet. And he's got, like, his wallet is, like, stuffed with pictures and, like, things he cut out of newspapers and baseball cards. It's weird. And so he starts flipping, and he shows me in his wallet he has a picture of Jesus. Not an actual picture of Jesus. Right? You guys get it, right? We're good? Yeah. So he's got this picture of Jesus, and he's like, Jesus? Jesus? And I'm like, yeah, yes, exactly, Jesus. And he's like, Jesus! And I'm like, oh, like, apparently he really likes Jesus. Maybe he's already, you know, already believes and whatever. And I'm like, that's kind of cool. But then he's like, oh, and he starts flipping through his other pictures, and every single picture he's like, oh, David Beckham, Beckham, B. Arthur. He has a picture of B. Arthur in his wallet. And then he flips, and finally there's a picture of a goat, and he's like, goat, goat. And I'm like, yeah, goat. And so I'm like, I gave up entirely on the whole, like, maybe he believes in Jesus thing, because he was just as excited about the goat. And so after he puts his wallet back, he looks me in the eye, and he gets really serious, and he says, do you know what name of God is? And I said, actually, I do. That's exactly what I was starting to tell you. God's name is Jesus. God came to our world in Jesus so we could know him. God's name is Jesus. And he went, no, no, no. And I said, no. And he said, no, God's name is 21. And I said, okay. And he said, do you understand? And I said, I understand that you think God's name is 21. And he went, no, no. And I'm like, you just said. And he goes, no, name God 21. Do you understand? And I said, you think God's name is 21. And he went, no, no. And I'm like, dude, do you want me to take the food back? Like, I'm really not that committed to fasting. I'll eat it. And he's like, no. And he's like, God name 20. And I'm like, I don't understand. You'll have to explain it. So he starts trying to explain it. I don't know if I understood. Like, it was difficult. I think what he believes is that there's 21 different world religions, that each different world religion worships God and calls him by a different name, but really there's just one God and we're all just worshiping the same God with different names. So I went, okay. I said, I think I understand what you believe, and I respect your right to believe that. I said, that's not what I believe, though. I believe that there's one God, and his name is Jesus. And he went, no. And I'm like, I understand. I get it. And so then he looks me in the eye, and he says, do you know who God is today? And I went, 21. And he went, no. And I'm like, are you serious? I'm like, I did that just for you. Like, I went with you. And he said, no. And I said, who is God today? And he said, who is God? God love us. God care for us. God feed us. Today you love me. You care for me. You feed me. Today you are God to me. And you know, in one sense, he was theologically wrong. Okay, I am not God. You can ask my wife. But there's another sense in which he was right. Because God calls us in the Bible to represent him to this world, to share his love with this world, to be Jesus to other people, to let them see Jesus in us. It's all through the Bible. Like one of the examples, there's a lot we'll put on the screen for you, but 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 20 says, we are therefore Christ's ambassadors, as though God were making his appeal through us. It's like we represent Jesus to this world. You know, looking back at what happened at that Burger King, most of me is kind of embarrassed because I did not have the right attitude about the whole thing. But there was a part of me that could almost kind of feel God saying, you did good. Your attitude could have been better, but you did good, and that guy got to see Jesus in you today. Good job. See, I had my own plan for that day, but God has a plan for my life every day, and it's to serve. It's to do good in his name, to serve others so that I can be Jesus to them. And that is a big part of the reason we serve. But there's another piece to this. And it's kind of a paradox. Do you know what a paradox is? A paradox is when two different things are both true, but it doesn't seem like they could both be true. You're like, that, they both can't be true, but they actually are. It's a paradox. And so here's the paradox. When we serve someone else, especially someone in real need, we get to be Jesus to them. But at the same time, and in a very different way, they actually also become Jesus to us. We become Jesus to them, but they also become Jesus to us. So I want to show you one of the places where the Bible talks about this. This is in Matthew 25, if you have a Bible with you. If not, we're going to put it on the screen. But the idea here is Jesus is speaking, and he expresses this half of the paradox, that it's not just that you become Jesus to this person, but they can become Jesus to you, especially if there's somebody really in need. And the scenario is it's supposed to be like the end of time, and Jesus has gathered up people who live their lives for him, and he's kind of commending them for the way they lived. And check out what he says in Matthew 25. We're going to start in verse 35. Jesus says, for I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. I needed clothes, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you looked after me. I was in prison, and you came to visit me. Then the righteous, and that's about the people who had, you know, lived their lives for God. Then the righteous will answer him, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see you a stranger and invite you in, or needing clothes and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and go to visit you? The king will reply, truly I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me. See, when we serve and minister to other people, it's not just that we're Jesus to them, but they also become Jesus to us. The person I think who just really got this, like, and lived it, is Mother Teresa, who spent her whole life basically serving the poorest of the poor in the slums of Calcutta, India. One time she was interviewed, and I want to read you just an excerpt of that interview. So the reporter asked the question, "What did you do this morning?" Mother Teresa answered, "Pray." Question, "When did you start?" Answer, 4:30. Question, "And after prayer?" Answer, "We try to pray through our work by doing it with Jesus, for Jesus, and to Jesus. That helps us put our whole heart and soul into doing it. The dying, the crippled, the mentally ill, the unwanted, the unloved, they are Jesus in disguise." Question, "People of the world know you as sort of a religious social worker. Do they understand the spiritual basis of your work?" Answer, "I don't know, but I give them a chance to come and touch the poor." Question, "What is God's greatest gift to you?" Mother Teresa answered, "The poor people." "How are they a gift to you?" She said, "I have an opportunity to be 24 hours a day with Jesus." Because she served the poor all day, she had the opportunity to be 24 hours a day with Jesus. I told you about a kind of good moment in my life that happened at a Burger King, and I guess I could take a little bit of pride in. I'm going to tell you about the moment in my life that I was the most ashamed of myself. I don't enjoy telling this story, but it was several years ago, and I was I spoke at something in Cleveland, and I was flying back home to go home, and I got dropped off at the airport kind of early, and so I went to my gate, and I sat down, and I got a book to read. And I was reading the book when I was hit by this, it was the most unforgettable sensory experience of my entire life. I was hit by this smell, and I honestly don't have words to describe it. I'm like, repulsive, disgusting, revolting, foul, nauseating, none of those words do this smell justice. I promise you, you have never smelled a smell so bad in your life. So I started like retching and gagging from the smell, and I'm trying to figure out what the source of it was, but I couldn't figure it out, and then it just kind of faded away. So I was like, all right, that was weird. And I just kept reading my book. A few minutes later, the smell hit me again, and like I just like kind of started retching, and I held my breath, and I started to look around trying to figure out what is going on here, and I saw this woman who had just walked up right next to me, and it was obvious she was from the Middle East, and as I kind of looked her over, I saw what I'm sure was the problem. She had sandals on, only sandals, and she was carrying a plastic grocery bag, and in the bag she had sneakers, only sneakers. And I think the smell was coming from her feet, her sandals, her sneakers. And she was standing next to me, and I could not stand it any longer. And in that moment, I had this kind of this rapid-fire inner dialogue that happened. I had the thought, this is the most sickening experience of my entire life. And then it was almost like there was this voice, this inner voice that spoke to me that was like, "Vince, chill out. She's a person. She's not her smell." And I thought, I know she's a person, but she does not smell like one. And this voice said to me, "Vince, she's from the Middle East. People from the Middle East eat different foods from you, and those foods have a certain smell. She's been walking all day probably, or her feet are sweaty. It's not a big deal." And I thought, not a big deal. I am getting up, and I'm going to get out of here. And I heard, "Vince, don't you walk away from her." And I thought, she's not going to know why I'm walking away. I'm not going to make a big deal of it or insult her. And it was like, no, Vince, don't walk away. Even if she doesn't know, and even if it doesn't insult her, this isn't about her. This is about you. And I thought, exactly, this is about me. And that's why I'm getting out of here. Because, you know what, I am not comfortable being here. And the voice was like, "Vince, maybe the most important thing isn't for you to be comfortable. Maybe it's for you to actually put another person before yourself. Maybe the best thing for you would be to be uncomfortable." And I thought, that's stupid. Well, like, sitting next to her is not putting her first. We're not going to have a chance to talk or develop a friendship. Like, I am leaving and getting out of here. And the voice was like, don't leave, Vince. This is your chance. This is your chance to die to yourself, to die to your selfishness and really live for another person and really experience real life. And I thought, no, I am leaving. When you talk about dying, I am going to be killed if I stay here and have to smell the smell any longer. And it was like, Vince, but what if not staying here kills your soul? And I thought, whatever, I'm leaving. And I did. I got up just very casually. I didn't look at her. I just walked away. Didn't make it a big deal. And I walked away as far as I could. And then I started gulping for air because I had been holding my breath for a long time. And I found a place on the ground and sat down. I read my book for a while. Finally, they started boarding my flight. And they said, zone two. I got up and got in line with zone two. And I'm standing there. And right after I walked up, the smell attacked me again. And I turned around and she was standing right behind me. And I smiled at her, I turned back, and I thought, you're really funny, God. You're hysterical. You have a great sense of humor. That's great. And I stood in line. I tried to only breathe through my mouth. I held my breath as much as I could. We walked onto the flight. We walked on the airplane. And as we're walking into the airplane, the thought finally hit me, I might be sitting next to her in this airplane. And I am ashamed to tell you, I started praying. I prayed, please, God, no. I know I'm wrong. I fully understand how wrong I am. It doesn't matter, God. Please, I would not be able to bear sitting next to her. Please, God, don't let me be sitting next to her. I was sitting next to her. Yeah. She was sitting right next to me, and it was just like this thing. I just started grumbling inside. I'm sitting there thinking, I can't believe I have to sit next to this woman from the Middle East who smells, I guess, like whatever it is that they eat in the Middle East, and next to her vile-smelling feet and sandals. I mean, how far did this woman walk today, and has she never heard of soap and water? And right then it hit me. Jesus was from the Middle East, and Jesus ate whatever it is that people from the Middle East eat. And Jesus walked all day, every day, in sandals. And Jesus would have rarely had soap or water touch his feet. And I realized in that moment that I would be offended by Jesus. Like most Christians, I like to imagine myself, someday meeting Jesus and kind of running up and giving him a hug. But what if I ran up and started gagging? What if Jesus' smell was repulsive, disgusting, revolting, foul, nauseating? And why wouldn't it be? Why would Jesus smell any better than this woman? Man, it was just a total slap in the face. It was like I finally understood. We saw 2 weeks ago that Jesus washed people's feet and asked us to wash feet. I realized I'm not even willing to smell them. In some way, that woman was Jesus. She was Jesus to me, and I completely missed it. I had a chance to be with Jesus, to serve Jesus, and I just didn't get it. But people like Mother Teresa, man, she got it. And it's so important that we get it, and I need to get it, because when we serve other people, we get to be Jesus with them, and they need to see Jesus. They need to meet him and be changed by the encounter, and they get to do that through us. But at the same time, it's also important that we serve other people because they become Jesus to us, especially people in real need. And we need to see Jesus. We need to meet with him and be changed by the encounter. And this is a big part of the reason we need to serve, not just in church, but everywhere, all the time, to everyone. Not only is it what God calls us to, and not only is it the only path to real life, but we get to be Jesus to other people, and they get to be Jesus through us. You have an opportunity to be with Jesus. And it's through serving. And so today, I just want to be real clear for the third week in a row. I'm asking you, for your sake, not mine, to serve. To make a decision to devote your life to doing good and serving other people rather than yourself. Listen, every single one of us, every single day, we're taking this great gamble. We are wagering our lives on what is it that's going to give me joy? What is it that's going to give my life meaning and purpose? And you can wager on serving yourself. But man, that path does not lead to real life. And a lot of us have already discovered that. Or you can choose the gamble that Jesus proposed and you can serve others. And so here at church, serve others. If you haven't signed up yet for a first serve, to just start experimenting and trying to figure out where should I serve, man, stop by those tables today and sign up for something. When you leave here today, serve others. In the parking lot, on your drive, at home, when you walk in tomorrow to your work, use that chance, use that opportunity, that whole day to serve others. In everything you do, everywhere you go, for everyone you encounter, just serve. It's your purpose in life. It's the only path to real life. You get to be Jesus to them, and they will be Jesus to you. And you'll live a bigger life. You will live a bigger life. And like we talked about last week, if you were here, your life will matter because you will make a big splash with your life, and the ripples, right, will just start going out. I mean, God could actually use your life, could use you to change the world. John Sculley became the youngest president of Pepsi Corporation at the age of 38. Back in the late 70s, early 90s, he designed the whole Pepsi Generation campaign, and he just had this meteoric rise at Pepsi. And right around the same time, Apple Computers was just starting out. A couple guys in a garage and starting to sell computers. And Steve Jobs met with John Sculley to try to convince him to leave Pepsi and become the president of this young upstart company that no one had ever heard of. Well, he met with him repeatedly trying to explain to him that, man, our company, what we're doing is going to shape culture. Like we are going to do innovative stuff that's going to change everything. And John Sculley just kept saying, I'm sorry, I can't go with you. I'm the president of Pepsi. I'm the youngest president of Pepsi. I cannot leave my awesome, high-paying, cushy job at Pepsi to go with you. Well, finally, it was their last meeting, and Steve Jobs again tried to use all of his persuasive skills to get Sculley to change his mind. And Sculley said, again, I'm sorry, I can't leave Pepsi. And Steve Jobs' head dropped, and he just stared at the pavement for a long, uncomfortable time. And finally, after this weighty pause, he looked up and he asked a final question. He said, do you want to spend the rest of your life selling sugared water, or do you want a chance to change the world? And that question cut to John Sculley's heart, and it changed his mind, and he left Pepsi, and he joined Apple, and the rest is history. And I wonder if Jesus showed up and spoke to you today, I wonder if he'd ask you a very similar question. Do you want to spend the rest of your life serving yourself, getting money and possessions and experience for yourself, only to die and lose it all? Or do you want a chance to change the world? And I know the question you might be asking, which is, what could I do? What should I do? Like, so should I go down to the airport, buy a one-way ticket to Calcutta and go serve, you know, in the slums of Calcutta? That's a good question, and it's actually interesting because Mother Teresa was asked that very question many times. Here's the answer she would always give. She would say this, I know you think you should make a trip to Calcutta, but I strongly advise you to save your airfare. It's easy to love people far away. It's not always easy to love those who live right next to us. There are thousands of people dying for a piece of bread, but there are thousands more dying for a bit of love or a bit of acknowledgement. The greatest scourge is to be so suffocated with things that we forget the next person. And so, what could you do for the next person? What could you do for the next person in your neighborhood? What could you do for the next person at your job? What could you do for the next person at the restaurant or in the grocery store? What could you do for the next person in this church? What could you do for the next person that will help you to have a bigger life and take you from a life of selfies to a selfless life and allow you to change the world? Whatever it is, do that. Do that. So we're done. We're done with our series. We're almost done with our service. We've got like 5 minutes left. But before we leave, and we do this just about every week, we want to give you a minute to think about what you've heard today and how it's going to apply to your life. And if we come here week after week and we hear good stuff and we go home and nothing changes, we have wasted our time. And so we give you a chance to think, so what do I do with this, all right? And so we're going to have music playing just for a minute or two. We're going to have some questions on the screen if that helps you, and just give you a chance to think about what you've experienced and what do I do with it in my life, all right? And during this time, we also make communion available if you'd like to take it. It's around the room. And communion is a piece of bread and a cup of juice that represent Jesus' body and blood given on the cross for us. You know, when Jesus was on the cross, he probably never looked smaller. His life never looked more insignificant. But that was actually the biggest moment of Jesus' life. And his death had the utmost significance for everyone who wants to say yes to a relationship with God. And that was the day Jesus changed the world. So let's pray, and then we'll give you a minute or two, and then we're almost done. God, we've spent 3 weeks kind of looking at what you say in the Bible, and what you say is so revolutionarily countercultural. You know, all of our lives we learn to serve ourselves, to look out for number one, and whoever dies with the most toys wins. That my life is all about how big a house I can get, how fast a car I can drive, how many vacations I can go on. And here we have Jesus saying, no, life is all about serving other people. God, it not only goes against our culture, it goes against something inside of us. There's just this selfish part of every one of us, and certainly in me, that wants to live for ourselves. So God, this sounds good, but it's not easy. And so God, I'm just praying that you would help us to draw a line in the sand this morning and to step over it. And just make a decision that with your help, I'm going to live a life not focus on myself, but focus on others. And I'm going to try to find every way and every opportunity I can to do good, to serve other people, to be Jesus to them, and in some way they're going to be Jesus to me, and I'll get to be with you, Jesus. And God, we thank you for Jesus, and that he was the ultimate servant to the point that he laid down his life for us, and thanks for communion as a way to remember that. God, I pray in Jesus' name, amen.